Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. We have a very special episode for you guys again today, draft-centric. I'm Alex Wolf, he's Gavin Shaw, and we are joined today by Ricky O'Donnell, who is the college basketball editor at SB Nation. Ricky has some great draft takes and on some of the top draft prospects for us, so we're going to get into that and start off today's episode naturally with Zion Williamson.
And then we get into Ja Morant, and this is where, because we obviously went over some of the same stuff with Jonathan Wasserman, where Ricky differs a little bit, where he doesn't necessarily think Morant is in his own class. We also talk about Morant versus Trae Young, particularly their respective passing abilities, and how Morant will hold up on defense on the next level.
And then finally, we end with RJ Barrett, who Ricky is not as huge of a fan of, especially not as Wasserman, who we had on last week. So you'll get to hear all about that and why he thinks RJ could potentially not be as good of a prospect as some people seem to think. All that and more coming up in Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox fouled from behind, counted and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome in, everyone, to a very special edition of Locked On Knicks. We're doing some draft previewing again today with Ricky O'Donnell, who is the college basketball editor at SB Nation. How are you today, Ricky?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. One of the foremost draft voices out there, at least in my opinion. And I have no bias as a fellow SB Nation contributor, posting and toasting. But I actually legitimately think your work is really good, so I definitely appreciate you coming on.
And Ricky, we wanted to, as much as we love complimenting you, and you deserve every bit of it, wanted to start with a small point of contention that I sort of agree with, but as a Locked On Knicks host and Manhattan native, I have to argue. I think about a month ago, you tweeted out, Ty Jerome is iconic simply for being the first non-trash New York basketball player since, like, Lou Alcindor. I don't know, but Stephon Marbury, Sebastian Telfair, who's kind of trash. I was pretty good in intramurals. Like I don't know if you saw the full scope of New York City basketball players, but I do agree with you that Ty Jerome's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I got instantly roasted for that tweet, which was just me trying to talk some shit and have fun. So I think I got what was coming to me for
I will say, in your defense, I'm constantly amazed that New York City doesn't produce more basketball players. And like, really, like, I think unless I'm like missing someone like obvious, like I guess Mo Bamba, but like Lance Stephenson, I feel like is like the main guy to come out of New York City in like the last decade. And
Kemba Walker says hello, guys.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. he's a little further back, but yeah.
You guys
will
have one next year with Cole Anthony, but I guess we'll save that for the 2020 draft preview.
Yeah, he just committed today, didn't he?
He just committed to North Carolina, yeah.
Yeah, so that was big news. But, yeah, we will. If all goes according to plan, hopefully we won't be talking about Cole Anthony next year, and we'll be talking about end of the first round guys. But that's wishful thinking. But for now, the Knicks have, at worst, the fifth pick this year, at best, the first pick, and Zion Williamson. So what better place to start than Zion? So, Ricky, I'm kind of just I'm curious, you know, we're going to ask probably every person that we bring on about the draft this, but do you think that anyone even comes close to Zion in this year's class as far as a prospect goes?
No, I can never remember another draft where there was a bigger gap between the best prospect and the second best prospect to this one. And it's reached the point where, you know, you can't really compare Zion to Ja Morant or RJ Barrett. Or anyone else in this draft class, you really just have to compare him to the best prospects of the last decade, because that's really what we're talking about with Zion Williamson. It's not how does he compare to RJ Barrett, it's how does he compare to Luka Doncic, how does he compare to Ben Simmons, how does he compare to Karl-Anthony Towns. I think you have to judge him on a historical plane, because against his contemporary, Zion Williamson is so clearly the most superior talent in this draft. To me, whichever franchise lands him, I'm a Bulls fan. I've lived my whole life in Chicago, so I'm hoping it's the Bulls, but it might be the Knicks, and whoever it is, they're going to get a franchise-changing player, in my opinion. Now, he's not a perfect prospect. I think that there are some legitimate questions, mostly about his durability. I think that that would be the main thing that I would be concerned about, just given how explosive he is playing at that weight, 280 pounds about. And then, you know, just the lack of pull-up shooting ability, obviously, is going to come into play as well. But to me, you know, Zion has a lot of questions, I think, to people who view basketball through more conventional terms. It's not that Zion, like, answered those questions during his year at Duke. He basically just made them all completely irrelevant. What position does he play? Well, he plays basketball. It doesn't really matter. Like, how would you best deploy him? You know, these are things that you're just going to figure out when he hits the ground running, because I think he's going to be so adept at so many different areas of the game, and he's going to just be such a dominant force of nature that, you know, while there are some legitimate questions about his fit and how his game translates in the NBA, as long as Zion's on the court and as long as he's healthy, I have very little doubt that he's going to be a complete and total stud.
Yeah, I think you kind of got into what, like, my favorite conversation to have about him is, and that is sort of the debate about who was the last guy coming into a draft you would think is better than him. And I know last time when we were on, we had Bleacher Report's Jonathan Wasserman. He was making the argument that Zion, in his mind, probably warranted going ahead of anyone in any past draft outside of Anthony Davis. Like, that was the next guy you could go back to and say, okay, he was clearly a better prospect. So I'm kind of interested to hear your take on that, Ricky, because personally, I think even without the benefit of hindsight, I sort of preferred Luka Doncic last year, and I still think it's kind of ridiculous given his resume that he wasn't the number one pick. But what's sort of your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, that was just the Suns owner being meddling and interfering to draft an Arizona alum. I think the Doncic versus Zion debate is fascinating. That's really where this gets interesting to me. Like, I had Luka number one for a full year in the mock draft I was doing for SB Nation. Obviously, I'm not tooting my own horn by saying that, because pretty much anyone with, you know, an interest in the NBA and the NBA draft agreed with that, besides for, you know, the Kings and the Suns, who are the two organizations picking at the top of the draft. Zion's durability is really the only thing that somewhat concerns me. If you're going to compare him to Luka, I would say that Zion has a much greater ability to be a game-changing player on defense. I think that Luka's game will probably age better. It's hard for me to imagine a 30-year-old Zion Williamson, but, you know, you could easily see Luka still being great at 35 or 36 or 37. In terms of the last player who I would take over him, I mean, it's probably LeBron. And I was a big Anthony Davis fan when he came in. That was just before, well, I was still a writer at that point, but I was mostly writing about Chicago sports. That was right before I started covering the draft. But just anecdotally, I remember I made a $100 bet with my friend that Anthony Davis would win an MVP in his career when he was entering the draft. So I thought very highly of Davis. I still don't know if I'm going to win that bet. Yeah. The clock is kind of ticking right now. But yeah, I would probably say, given the fact that the league has moved to so much more perimeter oriented, I really think that Zion is going to be able to be like an offensive initiator, like a de facto point guard in a lot of ways, even though, you know, he could be playing center on defense. I think that it just makes Zion so incredibly valuable in the modern game. Like, the game is becoming, has become increasingly more positionless, and he's the most positionless player I can ever remember. So to me, the most valuable skill set sort of right now is just general versatility, two-way versatility. And Zion has that in so many ways. The only thing he's really missing is the jump shot. And I think he's going to be a pretty good stationary catch and shoot guy. You saw the way his three-point shot evolved and continued to improve at Duke over his second semester. So I just think that, you know, because of his versatility, he just has such a high upside, and he's going to be really great.
Well, you know, you brought up, you know, the ultimate NBA comp in the current NBA of LeBron. And so I'm kind of curious, like, when I look at Zion and, you know, his play weight is apparently at, you know, 280, 285 right now. And that's probably where the durability concerns come in that you were just mentioning. Do you think that he's probably going to take, you know, a page out of LeBron's book at the next level and look to at least maybe not right at first, but eventually slim down to play more in the like 245, 250 range? Because that's kind of what's led LeBron used to play around 280 allegedly. And then now, you know, says that he plays more around 240, and that's helped his durability a lot as far as, you know, aging gracefully.
Yeah, it's like LeBron's weight and Kevin Durant's height are like the two NBA urban legends, right? Like every time we talk about Kevin Durant's height, I feel like I see him listed as an inch taller. He's got to be like 7'2 by now. And LeBron, no one's ever really known how much he's weighed. So I remember I did a big feature on Zion. I flew out to USA Basketball Junior Minicamp, which is an event that has like the top 60 high school players in the country every year in Colorado Springs. I've gone to that a few times in a row. And I did a story on Zion there when he was, you know, heading into his senior year of high school. And he was listed at 230 coming into the camp. And then, you know, they weigh all the players, they measure him. And he weighed in at 272, and it blew everyone's mind. Well, to me, that's when you sort of started to get, like, the full picture of what Zion was at the onset of his senior year of high school. And I still don't think anyone knew he would be this type of just total supernova when he entered Duke. I don't know if he's going to be able to slim down. I mean, he's shorter than LeBron. I want to see how tall Zion is, too. I mean, is he going to be 6'5", 6'6"? What's his wingspan going to be? It's supposed to be about 6'10", but it will be interesting to see just how he measures, you know, throughout there, because a lot of people are going to point to his lack of height and say, you know, use it as a knock against him. But to me, just being closer to the ground, that could just make him a ball handler. That can make him even more valuable in the NBA, and especially like in today's game, I feel like the best way, there's only so many spots on the floor for a non-shooter, right? And one of the best ways to hide a non-shooter is just to put him on the ball. I think that's why you see Giannis initiate the offense so often in Milwaukee, Ben Simmons do it in Philadelphia, and just like what the conventional wisdom is of what a point guard is supposed to look like has sort of been blown to pieces over the last few years. So I really think Zion could be the type of guy who initiates the ball, but in terms of his playing weight, I think ideally he drops down to around, you know, 250, 260, but who knows if that'll even be possible for him and how that's going to affect, you know, the other aspects of his game. So I think it's probably a little too early to guess on that, but his combine numbers are definitely going to be fascinating.
Right. And I'm kind of curious because I definitely agree with this, kind of describe him as a positional player in a league that's increasingly trending in that direction. But I guess there is still like something to the adage, like you are the position that you can guard. And I mean, I guess to some degree, he's just sort of going to be like a defensive dynamo and like sprinting around and like blowing up plays and like being like very anticipatory on that end. But I guess just on like if he's playing in the NBA finals, like, Who is he guarding on, like, a, and maybe this is a bad example because they're actually, like, a team that plays down to him, but, like, a Golden State or, like, a Houston, like, do you see him being able to play the five against, like, a Clint Capella? Or is he sort of a four who's able to switch a little bit?
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, to dance around that question, like, when Anthony Davis was drafted in the league, and that was only in 2012, I think Thomas Robinson was the fifth pick in that draft, if you really want to put a timestamp on it. It was like, when we were talking about Anthony Davis's defensive ability, it wasn't like, well, Anthony Davis can really hedge a ball screen and stay with guards on the perimeter and a switch everything defensive system, because no one was really running a switch everything defensive system. So it's like the league Zion's drafted into is not exactly the league he's going to play in, is the first thing I would say. To me, I see him just like you described him previously, as the type of guy who just runs around and blows up plays. As the league, even in the last year, has like started to play a little bit more zone, is that going to become an NBA trend 5 years in the future when Zion's 24? Is it going to be a, you know, the case when he's 28? I see him as just someone who can just make so many plays off the ball, ideally in like a free safety or linebacker type of role where he has a little roaming ability and can just guard a variety of different positions with his quickness and his strength. So in terms of like, if you put him in the league today, who would he guard? Well, I think like he'd be a natural matchup for Draymond Green. I think he'd probably just run Draymond Green right off the floor, beat him at his own game in a sense. Draymond would have a little length on him, but he would not be able to move Zion at all the way he's able to move a lot of other players. I think Zion would more than hold his own on the block. To me, he's really a potentially five-position defender as long as he's able to maintain his quickness, because he's always going to have super elite strength. Right now, he has like the focus defensively, I feel like, that he can stand in front of a ball handler on the perimeter. Even like, you know, the type of big scoring wings in the NBA that basically nobody can guard, like Kevin Durant, like Paul George. I at least think he's going to have the quickness to stay with them and the athletic explosiveness to challenge their shots and stuff like that. So I really, it's hard for me to like think, you know, if you put Zion in the league today, where like you would have to just sort of pigeonhole him in a sense. But we're talking about someone who's literally 18 years old. He's not going to be 19 until after he's drafted. So the whole concept of like how NBA defenses are going to evolve, I think a player like Zion could help shape that. Like right now you're looking at someone who could be a point guard on offense, a center on defense. That's never really existed before. So I think that, you know, the important thing with Zion is just that he does have the playmaking ability on defense. He does have all of the attributes you would want in someone who can make a big impact on that side of the floor. So, you know, we'll see eventually how his career plays out on that end.
So that was, first off, that was very intriguing, because that's not something that I hear super often about, like, drafting for what league he might be in his prime rather than the league he's coming into now. Not that you would draft anybody other than Zion anyway, but that's a really interesting way to look at that. But I guess we'll just end the Zion part here of Locked On Zion Williamson, the rebranded Locked On Mitchell Robinson.
Hey, that's my podcast name.
But what would you say are like your top three Zion skills? You know, just if you had to pick the top three things you think he does well, and there's so many of them, what are the top three things?
Just being a superhuman would be the first one. I mean, his athleticism is just so absolutely ridiculous. So just like his general explosiveness, I think, is obviously the first thing that jumps out about him. His efficiency would be the second thing. I mean, his stats are pretty much just as incredible as his highlights, if you're a big numbers nerd, which is mind-boggling, because you look at, you know, any of the high school highlight reels or any of the clips on Twitter that got millions of views or any of the top 10 SportsCenter plays, and it's like, well, this guy's a human highlight machine, but, you know, how good is he? Well, he's incredible. Like, his numbers are even better than his highlights to me, because he's just so efficient on both ends of the floor. He had the best college box score plus minus of the decade, and that's something you'll hear a bunch. But, like, he was literally the most efficient player in college basketball since we've been tracking advanced stats. And then the third thing I would say is how good of a teammate he is. Like, for example, RJ Barrett, who I'm not a huge fan of. I don't hate him. I think he's a pretty good prospect, and I could be meaner to him if I wanted to be, but just the fact that RJ Barrett legitimately took 5 or 6 more shots a game than Zion did, and Zion was not only totally cool with this, he like embraced it, just leads me to believe that like maybe Zion should just go into politics or like just save the world in general, because he's such a selfless human being, obviously, because like, yeah, Barrett came in with more of a reputation as being the number one guy. No one really knew Zion would become this phenomenon, but it took about 2 seconds to realize that RJ Barrett doesn't have the same talent as, you know, that Zion has more talent in his fingernail than RJ Barrett has in his whole body. And Zion never let Barrett sort of shot, you know, ball hogging tendencies scare him away. Him and Barrett seem like great friends. Zion seems like a really good teammate. He never puts himself above the team. He very much views himself as part of the team and not as the team is just like a vehicle for making him look great. So I'm really impressed with just his mindset on the court and just like how great of a teammate he seems to be.
All right. I feel like we probably talked enough about Zion, considering, and I always hate to bring this up on this podcast, as much as we like to feel like it's a sure thing, the Knicks only have a 14% chance in him. So let's move on. We'll be back with Ricky in just a second, but we wanted to remind you guys to listen to the Locked On Knicks on the Himalaya podcast app. Himalaya is the best app out there to get your podcast because they offer a couple of unique features. You get to fall asleep to your favorite podcast, which I think is pretty sweet as someone who loves podcasts and loves sleep. And they also allow you to make your own podcast. So if you think you can do better than us, you're probably right. And you can prove it using the Himalaya podcast app. John Morant, I'm really interested in his game and particularly in his fit with the Knicks. So in a hypothetical scenario, Ricky, where the Knicks end up with the number two pick, where would you sort of lean for them, given that they right now have already like two former lottery point guards that are, I mean, three if you count Emmanuel Mudiay, who I don't think will be back, who are disappointing to varying degrees, and under the presumption that they could possibly bring in Kyrie Irving this offseason, do you think Morant is, I guess not to the same degree Zion is, but to some measure just so far ahead of everyone else, that if you're the Knicks, you're just taking best player available and saying, you know what, like Morant's clearly the best guy. Like worst case, we could trade him down the road. Or would you go in a different direction given kind of the glut they have at that point guard position and the potential to add another guy this offseason?
Yeah, I do not think John Morant is head and shoulders above anyone else in the draft. And, you know, I'm a Bulls fan. Bulls fans really want John Morant at point guard. And I'm not even sold on Morant for the Bulls, even though they have a clear need at point guard. I think that Morant and RJ Barrett have sort of separated themselves in the conventional wisdom as the next two best prospects in the draft. But I really don't know. I think this is going to be a draft where we look back at it, you know, 5 years from now, 7 years from now, and like Bol Bol was the second best player. And it's like, how did we not see the 7'3" guy who's the best shooter in the draft being a superstar? But I just feel like it's one of those years where you don't really know how it's going to play out after the obvious number one pick in Zion. We can talk about Morant. I do think that Morant has a lot going for him. Obviously, the first thing everyone's going to realize about him is that he's really athletic, attacking the basket. He can explode above the rim, and he has tremendous vision. You've heard comparisons to him as a combination of De'Aaron Fox and Trae Young. I mean, that sounds good for sure. I do think there's some holes in his game, though, mostly defensively. I think that it's like going through air, sort of. Like, I don't really see him having just sort of the wherewithal to like navigate screens and to play sort of the help and recover style of NBA defense that is basically mandatory at this point. So I wonder if he's, you know, going to make an impact on the defensive end. Offensively, he is brilliant with the ball in his hands, but if the name of the game is versatility, how is he without the ball in his hands? He was actually a really good free throw shooter, which gives me a little bit of faith in his jump shot, but his jumper doesn't look very good. So he's always going to be someone who needs to like prove it to me, especially at the NBA level behind the NBA line, for me to be buying him as a shooter. Is he going to be like a knockdown off the ball guy? I certainly wouldn't think that. Really what Morant is like the hub of all things offensively. Like you need to put the ball in his hands, let him cook in a spread pick and roll system. You put some shooters around him. A center like Mitchell Robinson would be great with Morant. Just being able to go up and flush alley-oops. But at the same time, like, if he's playing with Kevin Durant in New York, then Durant is going to be, you know, initiating the offense so much. Now the question is, how much value does Morant bring off the ball? So these are the questions I would be thinking about if I get the second pick. I don't think there's an easy answer for the Knicks or the Bulls or for any other team who gets number two, besides for Cleveland, who should just take RJ Barrett because he stole those crunch time shots away from Zion. He deserves to get banished to Cleveland for 8 years. But for everyone else, I think it's going to be a difficult decision with the second pick, the third pick, whoever it is.
Do you think, like, similar to Trae Young last year, do you think that some people might get, you know, enamored with his scoring and sort of overlook how good of a passer he is? Because that was one thing, you know, in particular against the better competition in the NCAA tournament, that kind of stood out to me with Morant is that he does seem like a legit passer. Like he has real legit vision that I think is going to carry over no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, Morant's vision is his best skill for sure. Like if we're talking about the NBA as like a league of stars and who is the next best chance to be a star after Zion, it's Morant, I would say. He might only have, in my opinion, I don't know, a 15% chance to hit that outcome, but if he does, you're going to look really, really foolish for passing on him, especially now that he has sort of become the consensus number two guy, which he was way off the radar at the beginning of the year. So his rise just speaks to how great he was this season at Murray State. He's an amazing passer, and I think that there are definitely some parallels to Trae Young's passing ability there. I would probably take Trae Young as a passer over Morant because I feel like Trae Young has a little more creativity in his vision, being able to fire one-handed passes with both hands. Morant has some of that too. But, you know, you're right. Morant does have great vision, and that's going to be his calling card in the NBA, I think.
Okay, and then I wanted to move on and touch on RJ Barrett, seemingly your least favorite prospect, Ricky, which I can empathize with because I think relative to expectations, he's mine as well. And I don't know if you'd want to talk me out of this opinion, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Like, what makes him different than like a Harrison Barnes and a Rudy Gay? And I feel weird saying that because like objectively, like those guys aren't like terrible NBA players by any means. Like Gay in particular has had a really nice career, but I guess just like stylistically or aesthetically, like that's just so like both of their games are just so like distasteful for me. Like guys who are like good, but not elite scorers who take a lot of shots and then don't really, I mean, Gay's developed a little bit more of his game and so is Barnes, but don't really contribute that much else and just like never blow me away in terms of their overall skill level. Like do I sort of have the right of it with Barrett or do you think he is in a different class than those two?
I think you could certainly be right, but just for the record, I want to say that I made those same comparisons for Jason Tatum when he was in the draft as a player who I thought was a little too in love with the mid-range shot. And who I wasn't really sure had, you know, the modern game. So perhaps Barrett will be good. If you want the positive take on RJ Barrett, he is one of the youngest players in the draft because he reclassified. He was originally supposed to be entering college next year. So he's still older than Zion, but only by a month, almost to the day. So he'll turn 19 years old just before the draft. So you want, like, you know, production at the youngest age possible. And Barrett has done that. I mean, he did average 23 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists, I want to say off the top of my head, is a freshman at Duke. Those were as productive in the toughest conference in America in the ACC as any freshman we've seen in recent memory as a perimeter player. What scares me about Barrett is I don't think he thinks the game in a selfless way. If you follow him on Instagram, he has started calling himself the Maple Mamba, because he's Canadian and because he probably spent his entire life, you know, thinking I'm going to be the next Kobe Bryant. That was a lesson that, you know, for a lot of kids growing up around the time RJ Barrett grew up, maybe even around the time we grew up, that's like what you wanted to be, was, you know, that takeover scorer with that alpha dog mentality. And, you know, there's something to be said for that. I don't think that RJ Barrett's the next Andrew Wiggins, because like Andrew Wiggins has never even aspired to be that great in a way where RJ Barrett does, I feel like. But at the same time, there were so many different scenarios where I saw RJ Barrett just running headfirst into a brick wall. And when he fell down, he would get up and do it again. And when he fell down, he'd get up and do it again. So I wonder, like, is he going to be able to take a step back and realize that for RJ Barrett to be the best version of himself, less is more. He doesn't need to be a guy who's, you know, like, why was he taking 5 more shots a game than Zion? It's completely ridiculous. He's not half as talented as him. So that right there is a huge red flag for me. His shooting ability, he finished the year with a lower 3-point percentage than Zion. Yes, it was on much higher volume, but he was mostly just taking a bunch of bad threes for the entire year. I want to see RJ Barrett mostly as a point guard. That's a spot I would like to see him sort of hone his game. If you put the ball in his hands and let him initiate, you'd have to totally rewire the way his mind works, but I think that that's where he could potentially really be a good NBA player, because if RJ Barrett is like this wing scorer who doesn't have a reliable jump shot, I think that what you're going to get is best case scenario DeMar DeRozan, and young DeRozan was so much more athletic than RJ Barrett is today, so I don't think he's going to have the same margin for error on some of those drives. So to me, Barrett is really going to have to get over himself in a lot of different ways and just become a more team first player. If he can do that, I still think he could be the second best player in this draft, given his age and his level of production. But it's going to take him sort of rewiring how, you know, how he views the game mentally.
Do you think, like, to that point, do you think it might be better for Barrett one way or another to get drafted to a team that would have, like, better shooting around him and you know, just better players in general, and kind of put less pressure on him to be, like, the guy? Like, let's say in the hypothetical semi-Knicks fan dream scenario, the Knicks end up with the third pick, so Barrett's on the board, they take Barrett, and then they sign, like, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Do you think that that's a situation that could be better for Barrett, where he would kind of be, like, for lack of a better term, like, put in his place early, you know, and like, not immediately leaned on as sort of like the guy like he probably would be in Cleveland or something?
Yeah, I think that would be ideal for RJ Barrett. And, like, you know, I can say that RJ Barrett doesn't always seem like a good teammate, or he didn't during his 1 year at Duke, but, like, we don't know what the coaching staff was telling him to. Like, maybe the coaching staff was saying that, you know, they literally drew up a play for RJ Barrett when their season was on the line in the Elite Eight. They had one possession left. They didn't give it to Zion, they gave it to RJ. So, in a lot of ways, I think you got to look at the Duke coaching staff, which I wrote and got a lot of really nasty hate mail for criticizing Coach K when that happened. But I think that'd be a tremendous scenario for RJ Barrett. I mean, you'd get a big, long, lean perimeter player who's would be 19 years old, being able to learn from Durant and, you know, another point guard like Kyrie, or if they bring in anyone else. I mean, I think that would be ideal for a scenario for Barrett and, you know, for whatever team that drafts him to.
All right. I just want to throw this out there, Ricky. Once again, I am totally in concert with you. I think Duke's coaching staff was so atrocious this past year. And the fact that it's been like 5 years running now where they get like six of the, or like four of the top, like 12 or 13 guys in the country, and they just never recruit like any shooting. I don't know. That's just a continued frustration of mine. So I'm with that.
All right, and that's all for today. We don't want to blow all of our interview with Ricky on one podcast because we had such a nice long chat with him. So that is all for your top three prospects of Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, and RJ Barrett. But we will certainly be back soon with another episode with all of the prospects after that, should the Knicks fall to picks 4 or 5.
Yeah, really excited for it. Ricky was great today, and you guys are going to hear, he's going to go a little bit deeper tomorrow. We're going to get into it on a couple of guys. DeAndre Hunter in particular, he wrote a really good feature story on, and it was kind of cool getting more insight into him, because as I've made clear on this podcast, I think Hunter's a really interesting fit for the Knicks. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Darius Garland, who I think is a guy who gets a little underrated, but it wouldn't shock me if he ends up being a better NBA player than like a Ja Morant, and like maybe even comes out as the second best player in this draft. So that's really interesting too. Anyways, we'll get into that all that tomorrow and more with Ricky O'Donnell. Appreciate you listening to this one, and be sure to check that out.